join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Racing Association.
What happened there? There you go. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm back, Case.
Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA sired, PA bred to.
Yeah, I think we dropped on my end up here. Marty, I was talking about the pace and the meltdown scenario, and Mo Donegal even complicated his assignment further with that leap in the air a little bit, that little hop start, and that even set him back further. But, you know, talk about the way this race unfolded. No, do we not? Boy. Did you lose, Marty? I guess, yeah, okay, all right, yeah, get back, get Marty back, because I do want to get, so we will, yeah, we'll get Marty right back. You know, that, I'm anxious to hear Nick and, because, you know, Nick was actually in the opposite camp. Nick's thought was that there was potential here for Epicenter to maybe control it from the front end, and obviously, you know, that didn't happen, but... You know, Epicenter, you know, comes out, boy, you gotta imagine he is just heavily, you know, heavily bet coming in. So, and of course, early voting will be there to set the pace as well. There's Marty. Marty, sorry, I think I got dropped on my end up here. I was talking the pace and the way the race unfolded and what you saw going back watching the replay a few times.
Well, I mean, we all kind of thought there was a possibility of a meltdown the way it happened with Summers Tomorrow and Classic Causeway, although Classic Causeway wasn't even up on the pace at all. But, you know, just the fact they went as fast as they did set it up for a closer. But they all had, you know, they all had their chances to close, and only one of them really did, and it was the winner. So, you know, that's to his credit.
Anybody's trips in there that you picked up on later on?
I mean, not really. Zandon had every chance to win. So did Epicenter. I think Epicenter might be even money or so come Preakness Day. I don't know if you noticed the chart that I worked up. You know, it's buyer beware with a Derby runner-up back in the Preakness. Since Valley Ache turned the tables on Venetian Way in 1960, we've only had three Derby runners-up come back and win the Preakness, and a whole bunch of them, I think 11, have been the favorite, and only one of them, and that was Prairie Bayou 29 years ago in 1993, won the Preakness as the favorite and the Derby runner-up, and that's the role that will be filled by Epicenter. So tread lightly there. You know, we've had a whole bunch of them fool you. Easy Goer and Hill Rise back in 64, and you know, horses like Menifee and Captain Bodget and Victory Gallop, they were all favored in the Preakness and didn't win the Preakness after finishing second in the Derby. So, you know, I don't know who can beat him. I guess early voting would be the most logical candidate, if not Secret Oath. It looks like we're only going to get 8 or 9 for the Preakness. By the way, I'll miss you, Vic. I'm staying home in Louisville for this one. And, yeah. So the race lacks a lot of drama and intrigue without the Derby winner, but as we were talking about earlier, we'll go forward nonetheless.
Well, it does get enhanced by the presence of the filly. Having Secret Oath in there is certainly a storyline, and we're waiting on Chad Brown's call on Zandon as well.
Well, I mean, he's pretty much said he's not going to run. I mean, he's saying...
Pretty much,
he's
but,
saying,
you know...
He's saying leaning against, and it is the M.O. for a guy like Chad to not run back in 2 weeks. That, you know, therein lies the dilemma that, you know, has kind of dominated the conversation for the last 24 hours is, you know, that's why, it's essentially why Eric's not running back, because of the 2 weeks.
Well, the official word is that now he's completely ruled out at this point. Jeff Drown making the announcement in just the last few minutes. So we can officially take Zandon out of the picture, but Chad, with the cloud computing 2.0 when it comes to early voting and the Philly, and you know, simplification, I love the early arrival, he was my Derby play, and I mean, he's viable in here too. But I mean, Epicenter, yeah, in a lot of ways, Marty, in a lot of ways, Epicenter, I keep bringing up Oxbow from Orbs Derby, and that Epicenter has got the Oxbow kind of look. One of, you know, the only horse that survived, the pace and was there at the end.
Yeah, Epicenter even, early voting 3-1, Secret Oath 4-1, Simplification 6-1. There you go.
All right. Well, beyond the Derby, Marty, some of the other you had, I have already noted this week, Marty, among the handicappers, I've told everybody that you've been absolutely white hot for weeks, and a great start to the Churchill season. Nine on top winners in the 2 days, Oaks and Derby. What else did you come away with from Friday and Saturday?
I've got some buddies I hang with, and they all they've talked about is three technique and that win by Jason Cook and David Miller, and how awesome that was. You know, his daughter, I don't know if I've told you this, but his daughter Peyton, Jason Cook's daughter, my two daughters, Kelly and Molly, who are now 27 and 24, babysat her a lot when Jason, you know, had to go tend to other duties as a single father. So, Jason told me he saw people, and I'm not going to name any names, who had tears in their eyes as they were watching the winter celebration unfold, and what a tremendous story that was. And I was glad to be able to write that. I think it ran early this week on DRS.com. But it's stories like that that keep us coming back. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here writing about a guy named Steve Capps for the Sunday editions of the Forum. He won a race last evening, the fourth race, with a filly named Hannah's Haven. And it was just his second career win. He's 64 years old. He used to work as a hot walker and groom for Harry Trotsick and T.W. Kelly. And he made it up to groom for Jack Vanberg and Bill Mott. He's been an agent and breaks babies and raised two kids and worked out of racing for a while. It's just there's all kinds of good stories in this game, Steve.
Oh, I love it. And the mention of Trotsick, I'll send you a picture you can share with him. But I saw that. That's funny. I printed the Churchill charts from yesterday, and it's funny, but the two Steve Asmussen pushes from Tuesday, Steve talked about Undelay in that maiden first, and then, of course, Alejandro, the nephew of Rachel Alexandra, not definitely. What would we call it? That's not right. Rachel Valentina's son. They both ran well. Undelay was 10-1, but got beat by Chapman and the Violence colt, Drew's Gold. Two placements for Asmussen. But I saw that Steve Capps had won a race.
Yeah, and I just talked to him about an hour ago, and it's a good story. You know, my brother, Paul, one of his first guys, he worked for a guy named Cecil Bernice, and he worked for Harry Trotsick, and they called him Traps Trotsick because traps is your gear, your webbings and your tack and everything. And they said that Harry never got rid of anything, so he had all these old traps that he'd take from track to track. the old Hasty House Farm house trainer.
I love it. Couple of other winners of yours that you identified. You liked Obligatory in the grade one for the fillies and mares. That was a good call. And Marcus actually also made her his best bet.
She's got to be the favorite right now for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, if there is such a thing. That run she produced down the lane, it was fabulous. And I messed up my bet because I really thought that Edgeway would put away the other speed and be those two to the wire, but she didn't hold up her end of the deal. But anyway, had a great week betting. My brother had that horse. You know, they interviewed me on TBG for the first time in years, and I touted that horse. It was right before my brother's race, and I touted that horse that he won with on Thursday, and that catapulted me to a resounding victory.
I love it. Marty, anything for today or tomorrow at Churchill too?
Oh gosh, the days are I get them all mixed up. I'm looking at the Sunday overnight, and Soup and Sandwich, the last place finisher in the Derby last year, is back in, and he seems like he's rounded back to form. I've got him picked in the eighth race on Sunday. That's the best I can do for you, Beck.
All right, well, and tomorrow in the second, you tabbed Russian Roulette as your best of the day in a 10-claimer.
Okay. I don't have it.
That's like probably you probably did that on Tuesday. You were or no Wednesday night probably 8-5 though for Matt Shearer is Russian Roulette. Marty's been the best advice we can give is just roll with Marty. Somebody said, who was it that said to me in the press? In the press quarters, they said, I can't hit a lick. And I said, just bet along with Marty. Just whatever Marty's got in the boxes, in the grid, get with him.
Yeah, that's also the day I'm going to get blank, too, Vic. So, yeah.
That's the way it works.
Take it all with a this is a very humbling game, as we all know.
Exactly. Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee, Marty, so much fun the 2 weeks. Thanks for everything, and I am sorry you're not going to be in Baltimore. Always one of the highlights. We talk about your years at the Baltimore Sun and the time there before you joined the Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority, since
1894. Thanks a lot, Vic. See ya.
Marty McGee, everybody. We'll stay here and catch up. We lost a couple of minutes there. Not a big deal. We'll be all right. I've got a little case. I've got a little bit of room probably with Jim. I don't want to, because Nick, we got to keep Nick on time. And let's, you know what we're going to do? Let's slip. Scott in first, all right? Scott Shapiro, and we'll get some plays from him, all right? I think we're going to do that, and then probably at the top of the hour we'll go to Nick, and then I'll get Jim Miller, and he'll give us Jim and Hammer and Jammer and Paul Matisse. All right, that's going to work, all right? So let me give you, go to Shap, and since he's been in person the last couple of weeks, right? Make sure that I'm giving you the right. I hate that. Yeah, that's right. Go ahead, go with that. You know what I wanted to mention? Because as I was cleaning through all the various DPs and everything else that I accrue over a period like the lead up to Derby. The morning line that we used from Tyler Wissman ended up, Tyler could not have done a better job. I mean, he nailed that top to bottom, starting with Epicenter, who he had at 9-2 as the favorite. He went up at 4-1. Zandon, he had it 5-1, 6-1. Taba, he had 6-1, basically 6-1. Mo Donegal was his, and Messier were his third and fourth choices at 10-1. Mo Donegal went off at 10-1. Messier, a couple ticks below, 7-1. He said 12-1 next on Abario, went off at 15-1. Then he had Cyberknife 12-1, went off at 15-1. Charge It, he had it 15-1, went off at 16-1, and then Smile Happy, he had it 15-1, went off at 14-1. just a tremendous job by Tyler, and that's one of the reasons we kind of focused. And then in terms of the 50-to-1s, he was, you know, right on there. Happy Jack, of course, who was a 50-to-1, and who, by the way, is going to go in Preakness, according to Doug O'Neill yesterday. He had Happy Jack at 50-to-1, but Happy Jack actually went off at 23-to-1. Basically, the magic of having the name Jack in your horse's name. If you want to depress the price of your horse, put Jack in the name, like My Boy Jack, and now Happy Jack. If you're a horse player owner, there's a warning for you. Don't do it. Just say no. Come up with something else. I don't know how to explain. It's crazy. It's just crazy. That's the second Derby now in what? In 3 years, 4 years with a Jack that, you know, took money that really had no business taking money. Scott Shapiro swings by. Chap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I saw you get back to work yesterday at the post-Derby miasma starts to clear, and everybody has to get back to work. The first order of business before you have any weekend plays, your Oaks and Derby aftermath, your postscript.
Yeah, in terms of the Oaks, you know, Secret Oaks, to me, much the best. I thought kind of a sneaky good effort from Echo Zulu, even though we'll probably see her turn back to one turn after giving the mile and an eighth a go. They went pretty quick up front, sat off the pace, and was much the best of those involved early on. The others really struggled to finish the deal, so I thought she didn't lose anything in defeat. But Ness had a pretty good and fair run of it, as did Kathleen O, and obviously Ness finishing second, but a distant, you know, well-beaten second. And Kathleen O, probably a little disappointing for her backers and her connections, getting that kind of favorable set up front, but to me, Secret Oath much the best, and a deserving chance to take on the boys in the Preakness again after that third place effort in the Arkansas Derby. And then in terms of the Kentucky Derby, the two horses out of the Risen Star, Epicenter and Zandon, both ran real big. I thought Zandon had every chance to get by Epicenter, Rich Strike aside, and Epicenter showed a lot of heart to be able to hold that one off when making that first move. Obviously a tremendous ride and story for Rich Strike coming from well out of a great ride by Sonny Leone, and much respect to the connections and doing what they want to do in terms of the Belmont not in the Preakness. I thought Simplification, who ran fourth, could have easily been fifth or sixth if not for a patient good ride by Jose Ortiz. You know, Sonny Leone's ride stood out, but I thought Ortiz had a sneaky good ride. Mo Donegal, maybe could have gotten into the mix a little more with a similar voyage as Rich Strike, but I don't think he had the momentum despite that, even if he came along the inside to get the best of the top three. But and then Messier was probably a pretty sneaky good effort. Very early move off that real hot pace by Johnny V. And I thought Tava was as disappointing as anyone. Definitely a part of things early on, but really showed no fight. And Cyberknife a little bit disappointing as well. But nothing too crazy in terms of playbacks or play against moving forward. But looking forward to the Preakness.
Well, it had it all. It was about as crazy an ending, you know, to a Derby weekend. I suppose it's not like Mind That Bird is so far, you know, removed either. It's not like it's decades ago. It's fresh enough, I think, in the memory. But for anybody that's come to the game since then, it was an unusual finish. And
it was the one thing I'll say, I think, very positive, other than, you know, connection, getting the huge win is always a cool story. But I got a lot of, you know, texts and emails and stuff from people that I, you know, don't even hear from normally at Derby time, you know, asking questions about, you know, how this happened or why this happened, and, you know, the also eligible getting in, and, you know, the pace being hot and all that stuff, which I thought was very good for the game, you know, even though I ripped up a bunch of tickets and would have done a lot better if it was an Epicenters and in 1-2 punch. But, yeah, tremendous tremendous story and a great return weekend for the Derby and the cards before it, you know, full fans. Just felt real great to be back if we dodged the bad weather for the most part.
There you go. All right, well, let's for those that had their Derby tickets ripped out from under them, they're alive. I've seen so many comments of people that when they saw Epicenter rebuff Zandon, they thought, you know, he's home, you know, he's home free. And so many people had, you know, had their tickets ending with either Epicenter or Zandon. And so there's, I think, some of the stunned, you know, some of the stunned response to the end, to the finish, and to the winner has to do with that. You know, that people thought, all right, where I'm home with whatever plays they had ending that way. So it's... it's just wild, just crazy. All right, let's get some action. What do we like this weekend?
Yeah, you want to start with, I got a couple things today and then a couple
sure.
things tomorrow. Starting today, I thought the card was pretty challenging today, especially later on in the proceedings. I know my colleague Joe Christopek has a number of prices on top, and I have a couple as well, starting in race 7. A maiden special weight event, a mile and an eighth over the turf course. And I don't fully trust any of the runners with two-term turf experience, so I'm taking a bit of a chance in here with a second-time starter, number 6, Gillane, a 3-year-old colt for Dane Kibitzky. Kibitzky, 20% first-time turf, 121 start sample size, $2.90 ROI. And the Dam, Daydream, and Gracie won 6 of 19 on the turf for over $170,000. And this one exits the maiden race where B-Doc ran off the screen for Doug O'Neill. So really didn't get out of the gates well that day. Finished fourth, but a well-beaten fourth. Hopefully he can get out of the gates better and maybe dictate terms and put stuff off the pace with Colby Hernandez. So that's race 7, number 6 is Gillan at 15-1. And then... and then in the next race, I got my play of the day is number, I mean, I respect, very good race, by the way, the 8th, a third level allowance, so that might as well be a stakes race, $141,000 purse for the feature today, mile and a 16th on the main track. And no doubt, you know, Masca Parade is very interesting in here, first start since the sixth place effort in the Travers for Al Stahl, and then also Promise Keeper, who comes off, been freshened up after that third place effort to Olympiad and Proxy, losing very little in the Pete and the New Orleans Classic. But I think number 6, Twilight Blue, is sitting on a career best effort close to the form cycle. Has run two good races over this racetrack for Joe Sharp. Won the day return race back on February 25th at Oaklawn, and then was wide throughout last time out against somewhat similar, weaker group, but, you know, similar condition at Oaklawn Park. I think Brian Hernandez Jr. should be able to sit a nice trip just off the pace, and at 12-1 on the morning line, I like Twilight Blue quite a bit for that big race today.
Well, and I appreciate the, you know, the reaching for a price. I Mass Parade, it, to me, the way in which Al Stahl has kind of brought him along and has handled him conservatively, imagining with the Foster in mind, I imagine he'll be ready, but... it is a good group. I'll have to look at this, actually, a little bit. This is a nice race.
It's weird that he took the blinkers off in the 2 starts at Saratoga after those big efforts, especially the Ohio Derby and then the huge race on the Derby undercard. And the results weren't quite as good. Those were without LASIK. I'm sorry, now he takes the blinkers off. My apologies to everybody there. Just kind of wondering why the blinkers would come off with all those good efforts with the blinkers. But it would be good for him to get LASIK back.
The Lasix is certainly the significant factor here, but if I had to guess on the blinkers, when you have a young horse, and this horse started his career with blinkers, it might just simply be a maturity thing, and that you know, that Al just sees him, you know, that he's not as easily distracted or intimidated by other horses, or you know, experimenting, taking them off, you know, to see, you know, have him relax a little bit more. I mean, he is a horse that's, you know, that when he broke his maiden, he won up. In fact, both of his wins have been fairly close to the pace. So it might just be a case of, you know, maturity, and that's a question you can ask Al in the winner's circle, or have Joe do it.
I'm looking forward to seeing his return. Was very impressed with what he put forth, you know, basically from March on last year, after taking a little while to figure things out. But good point with you on the equipment change. So really looking forward to that race. Very, very difficult late pick five today. Definitely, if you're someone that likes opportunities to maybe bust out in a couple of your legs and spread out a little bit, I think it's a great sequence to jump in. And the bet back races for Twin Spires promotion, we're doing a bet back promotion every day here at Churchill Downs to get up to $10 back on second or third on your win bet. Those are 7, 8, and 9, all three very competitive races. So definitely check that
nice.
Out and opt in before you begin to play. So, all right, then Saturday, didn't think there was as many price opportunities on Saturday. Did have one in the last race of the card, and the bet back on Saturday are races 7, 9, and 11. But a couple horses I like, race 3, the turf sprint, first level allowance event, and number 2, Apache Tears, ran huge at Keeneland, losing to Lyrical Poet for Wesley Ward, who ran a big race that day, wiring out the field at even money. But Apache Tears had a nice pocket trip and almost ran that one down at nearly 17-1. And I think she'd get a pretty similar trip in here against a group that's solid, doesn't contain anyone like Lyrical Poet. So I thought 4-1 for the Bull McKeever looks like a pretty fair price in that one. And race 4, $20,000 maiden claimer. I thought this was a pretty wide open group, and I have some interest in number 2, Nibbles, 6-1 on the morning line. First start at 2 turns for Jeff Hiles, who claimed this one for $50,000 at Fairgrounds. Took a lot of money on debut that day, but followed the 2 pace setters around the track. I think on the stretch out could be involved under Corey Lannery, and don't see a heck of a lot of speed, so maybe an aggressive ride there and a pretty good price in the 4th at number 2, Nibbles. And then towards the back of the card, I got 2 plays, one of them a low price horse, race 7, starts the late pick 5, first level allowance event for 3-year-old fillies over the newly renovated turf course. And number 1, Walkathon, was extremely well met early on in her career. On debut, in fact, went off at 8-5 at Keeneland in a 10-horse field. You don't see Ian Wilkes firsters go off at that price normally, but very disappointing that day. Bounced back a little bit in the subsequent starts on the dirt, but really seemed to find her surface, I thought, on the turf at Keeneland on April 22nd. Relaxed real nicely, and I thought finished well. I think she's got a good chance to win back with the rail draw with Julian Le Perru returning. And my play of the day, race 11, finale, is made special weight event over the turf course for fillies and mares. And I thought number 2, She's Gone, was capable of taking a big step forward here. And fourth career start, second off the bench for Vicki Oliver. The dam, She's Not Here, won the yellow ribbon a couple of times. This horse bred to go 2 turns. And I thought really never got a fair shot at it. Rafael Bayrano did a real good job in the far outside draw of angling over and saving ground in that Keeneland race first off the bench. But was along the inside, just kind of caught behind horses, never really got a fair shake. I think with a fair shake at 12-1, Bayrano riding very well with these off-the-pace type runners to start the meet. Percentage not that high, but his ROI is booted home some prices. And hopefully he can boot another one home to end the day with She's Gone.
12-1 for the 2-horse in the 11th race for Scott and Vicky Oliver and Raffi. She's gone 12-1, and then Walkathon in that 7th. You know, there's a horse in the 7th that I'm a little interested in getting on the grass, even though the Cupids are not necessarily doing much on turf so far. Princess of the North did run nicely in breaking her maiden and then in that stake try at Turfway. She was okay on the synthetic. If she translates to grass, and that's what Cassie and Dave Carroll are doing here, Princess of the North, you get Giroux and you're 12-1 there. So maybe if you're keying off of Scott's Walkathon, you can include the 9 as well, Princess of the North. Scott, what'd you do in the feature, in the overnight stake, the Mamzell, the turf sprint?
Yeah, I mean, it just looks to me as if it's Twilight Gleaming's race to lose without question. I mean, she lost at 4-5 last time, but Slipstream ran huge, I thought. So I don't think Twilight Gleaming really lost anything in defeat. There's no one of that caliber in this field, in my opinion. If you're looking for some value horses underneath, I thought maybe the 11 Divine Charger on the far outside, moving back to the grass for Jordan Blair, who does good things with his starters here at Churchill. Not a huge win percentage, but a positive ROI. I thought the outside draw was interesting for this one. You get Brian Hernandez Jr. And then I also thought that Barkey's Kitchen for Michelle Lovell, who won nicely on the review on February 26th at Fairgrounds. Wasn't the strongest group, but she won real nicely. Michelle tried the dirt last time in Keeneland, and she got caught up in an early duel, tired. So I thought maybe Margie's Kitchen and Divine Charger could maybe provide some value underneath, but I don't know about you. To me, Twilight Gleaming looked like a much best in here.
Well, there is one horse I guess we should point out, since Jerry Jamgochian is going to join us later. There's some low-profile connections in here. Royal County, the 7, Eric Reed and Sonny Leone. And it's pretty funny to look down and see Sonny Leone's riding stats. 1-for-1.
I'm wondering, they had a horse today, too. I'm wondering, do you think, you know, are they going to take a little more money than they used to take? Or is it kind of one of those, I don't know. But it is interesting to see now. I mean, I saw these connections a lot at Turfway. And you see them, you know, Keeneland and here and now.
Yeah.
There's a Kentucky Derby winning connections. It's sure something.
I love it. Well, Scott, I had a great time with you the 2 weeks. Thanks for everything. And we'll touch base through this spring meet. And good luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
Sounds good, Steve. It was great getting to see you so much. And you have a great weekend. Good luck to you today and tomorrow as well.
Twin Spires and plenty of great offers, including a Hit It and Split It Lone Star Pick 4 promotion, as well as the placement deal. Just opt in on all of them. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Nick Tamaro standing by. We got Nick. We're going to check in with Jim Miller at Hawthorne as well. Hammer and Jammer. a rare opportunity to have Hammer and Jammer on one show. Paul Matisse in hour 3 for his always enjoyable Derby Oaks weekend recap. And speaking of Derby Oaks weekend recaps, Thoroughgraph, the most generous proprietor in all of racing information, Jerry Brown has got the figs up, came up I think on Wednesday night. The figs are up if you want to review how everybody ran Friday and Saturday. Very interesting. And frankly, the number, he basically ran a 1, Rich Strike. And given, you know, where he had come from off the synthetic, probably quite beneficial to take the 5 weeks between starts, to be honest. I mean, if it was strictly, you know, meat and potatoes racing, you absolutely would give your horse as much time off of that effort as you could. I mean, the fact that it's Preakness, it's a little different. We'll see what Nick thinks. Nick Tamaro next at the races. Weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires. Back after this.
The Bonds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Horsemen, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to HollywoodPNRC.com/racing.
Career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsewheels.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsewheels.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsewheels.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsewheels.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About 4 minutes in to hour two, and it, Nick just said to me, "Can I guess he had a little conflict, so we thought we would go to Jim Miller first, but now I think Nick says come to him. So I hear somebody, I don't know if it's Jim Miller or Nick Tamara.
It's Nick, yeah. I got a call from Casey, and so I'm ready to roll.
All right, well, then let's do it, because I know you got a bit of a drop-dead time on you, and of 20.
If it's 10 minutes past that, it's no big deal.
No, no problem. Given the fact that you're able now to spew out quarter horse races sharp as a tack, you should have no trouble. First of all, let me get your Derby Oaks recap before we do anything.
Well, it was certainly memorable. I was watching the race in the Jockey Club at Sam Houston, and one of the regulars there that I've known for a long time standing in front of me. And so they came off the turn, and of course I thought Epicenter was going to go on to a pretty handy win and looked then like he and Zandon were going to battle it out. I was alive quite nicely to both of them and a number of other horses. Shockingly, not one of them was Rich Strike. And as he searched up the inside lane, this guy turned around to me and said, "Who was that?" I said, "That was the 21. And he's like, "The 21? And it reminded me a lot of 2009, where I watched in the same place and sort of sat in awe as mine that bird surged up the rail. And I think the you know, the shock in both Travis Stone and Larry Colmus's voices calling the race was real, because it was, that was generally the emotion that, that most of us saw. You know, taking a step back and looking at it from a handicapping perspective, you know, there's no reason, and it's not, it doesn't make you a big meanie or, you know, somebody who doesn't appreciate racing or things like that, to be very realistic about it. This was a horse who got one of the all-time great Kentucky Derby rides. He saved every inch of ground that he could for a horse coming from deep in the pack. He got one of the most historically fast paces a horse could ever get in that race, and he still got up to win by a neck. And so we should be very realistic about the race itself and the performance and where it fits historically and where it puts him, quite honestly, as a horse in this crop. And so I understand why his connections are waiting for the Belmont. I mean, my personal opinion is that they're using flawed logic, that he's somehow a much better fit for the Belmont than the Preakness, but at the same time, they're the ones making the decisions, so we can disagree with it as much as possible, but that's reality. It does kind of make me a little upset for racing, because racing needs good stories. Racing needs horses that can do big things, and while I think there was a basically a 0% chance Rich Strike was going to win the Triple Crown, I certainly wish that, that he had been given the opportunity to try. So, you know, the biggest takeaway from it, from my perspective as a handicapper and as somebody who likes to focus on trips, was that Epicenter was best by a very large margin, and those of us that felt like he was quite clearly the best horse in the crop coming in were validated in that opinion. Unfortunately, we couldn't cash tickets on it. So I think he will prove the rest of the year that he is the most elite horse in this crop, and I trust Steve Asmussen implicitly to get the best out of him and keep him going for the entire year. That's something this barn's been incredibly good at. I don't think Zandon lost much in defeat. I thought he ran well. I think when push comes to shove, he probably wants to go a little bit shorter. And I'm very interested to see how Chad Brown kind of navigates the rest of the year, having Zandon, and then also apparently planning on stretching out Jack Christopher in the long run, which will be very interesting as well, because he came back with what I thought was a very strong effort in the Pat Day Mile. The Oaks was, you know, it was nice to see Secret Oath run back to some of her better races, and I thought she got a very heady ride from Luis Saez. He took advantage of the setup. She did go a little wide, maybe a little earlier than she needed to, but she was best on the day, and I don't particularly think it's a great idea to run her in the Preakness, but I understand now it's a little bit of the starch has been taken out of the race in terms of some of the fanfare, so it's nice to see that as a storyline. But I think she'll ultimately prove to be pretty tough in the three-year-old filly ranks down the line. You know, I wonder if they run her a little too much, if a horse like Ness, that's probably going to continue to get better. That was only her third start of 2022. I don't think she had any excuse on Friday at all, but I do think that she, you know, has the potential to get better as the year goes on, if Secret Oath, you know, maybe having a little bit too active a campaign could eventually take a little bit of a toll.
Well, we are going to get, I think, some reads on those three-year-olds that were emerging late, and we're going to talk about them basically momentarily, including the Peter Pan crowd that has got some horses that showed signs of quality, Nick, and we'll get to that basically now. We've got 11 minutes, so let's dive in. I appreciate the thoughts. And actually, as we do this, let me ask you one thing. Well, you addressed it, actually. That's fine. About, you know, where this stands in terms of, you know, how to view them waiting. But we'll see.
Different. Yeah, it's different than anything we've seen. I can't count 2021 because, you know, we obviously the cloud was hanging over everything, and I don't think Mandaloon skipping the Preakness is really something that you can say. I don't even remember why Country House didn't run in the Preakness. I guess he was injured. It seems like that was 10 years ago. Doesn't it, right? I mean, you know,
it does.
It seems like it was forever ago, and you know, Andy Serling, who's a savant for these kind of things, didn't even remember that Country House skipped the Preakness when he tweeted it yesterday and said, when was the last time the Derby winner willingly skipped the Preakness? And so, you know, that's basically what it boils down to, and you know, the notion that he was somehow at a significant disadvantage because of track profile or anything like that at Pimlico, when two of the horses, the two favorites, are going to be a one-way speed horse who just ran second in the Wood Memorial after winning the Withers in wire-to-wire fashion. He'll be the second or third choice, and the favorite's going to be Epicenter, who's a speed horse. So, you know, the difference is he going to get the enormous pace setup that he did in the Derby? No. He's likely never getting that again. And so if you think that that's what he needs to win, then, yeah, he's going to be up against it. But guess what? He's not getting into the Belmont either.
No, although he did finish, and I keep referencing Mind That Bird, who certainly acquitted himself fine 2 weeks later in Baltimore behind Rachel, and then, you know,
we got a bad ride for Belmont, but he didn't run that bad.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Was that the day that Calvin said he thought the rail was bad and it was like a super gold rail?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, he was trying to explain the move. I mean, it was quite a far turn move. But no, I mean, look, and there's also something. See, one of the things about why a lot of us really clamor for Derby horses to run back in the Preakness is that this idea that horses can't be asked to do too much too quickly is wrong. When they are sharp and they are at peak fitness for a race like the Derby, you want to run them back as fast as possible. Think about all of the races run at lower levels in this country and even throughout the world for horses, for, you know, regular run-of-the-mill horses, that when they get in form, you run them and run them and run them. And then when they show you and they tell you that they're not in form anymore, that's when you back off. Right, but you're talking about a horse that obviously, I mean, take nothing away from Eric Reed or him. He was obviously trained properly to be at peak fitness for last Saturday's race. And yeah, it surprised most of us, but big deal, he still did it. You want to strike while the iron's hot. The more you leave that horse in a stall or galloping or anything like that, you lose that edge. You know, like anything else that we do in life, when you get good at something, you want to keep doing it and doing it and doing it until you realize you're not that good anymore.
Well, and I'm just looking at, I just pulled out the Preakness media guide, and Mind That Bird closed from last, from 13th, and that was at the second call. He was still 13th, and the splits were 23, 46 and 3, 111, and in the stretch, Rachel had a four-length lead that was reduced to a length at the wire, and Smith was still coming on Mind That Bird. Even the suggestion that the Preakness doesn't lend itself well to him, all they have to do, and anybody listening Tuesday could tell, I think, from Rick Dawson, that this was getting very, this was really iffy. Took me aback, because I think I even said to him, I said, so you're telling me that there's really a distinct chance that you may not run? And the answer obviously was yes. But I think it's more simply, you know, what Eric said about giving him real time between races. And certainly that sheet, that third graph page, I mean, for those that believe in sheet methodology, It screams some time between races for him. So I think he could have been, you know, very effective and had a Mind That Bird type effort if he wanted to go to Baltimore, but he's not. And we will bet on the ones that are there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, he could have finished eighth in it, and it wouldn't have mattered, right? I mean, he still would have been, he's just a Kentucky Derby winner. Nothing's going to stop that. By the way, Rachel Alexander got a 108 buyer speed figure in winning that Preakness. I couldn't remember whether the track was on the slower side that day. And, of course, the horse that she dueled into submission was eventual Breeders' Cup Sprint winner, Big Drama. So it was a good pace setup. But, again, your point is completely valid in that Mind That Bird got good, and he stayed good for about 5 weeks. He happened to really never get good again at any point in his career. But that was a 5-week stretch where I think it perfectly illustrates the idea that when a sharp, informed horse is running, they're going to keep producing.
Well, whenever there's a circumstance like this, I pull out Norman Dale, and I would hope that you would bet on who we are, not who we are not. So that's
well, and you know, the only other thing, Greg, I agree with you completely. And not that long ago, there was a horse that ran very, very well in the Kentucky Derby in a losing effort, and a close friend of mine said that a Hall of Fame trainer said to them, "Well, that horse is going to run back in the Preakness, right?" And he said, "No." He said, "Okay, he'll just get hurt standing in his stall," and it's exactly what happened. So you leave horses off when they're ready to run, and when they're in form, that's what ends up happening. So, look, I hope we see Rich Strike again. I highly doubt he'll win a meaningful race again. But, yeah, so I hope he's all guns for the Belmont.
Let's rip through tomorrow's cross-country pick five. And it's really not crossing anything except maybe
it'd be
the
like
turf
a cross
course.
Island pick five?
It's not even the Cross Island Pick Five.
It's not even the Cross Island Pick Five, right?
it's kind of funny though, and this is fun. People like all stake sequences, and even though these fields are smallish, there's some competition to be parsed through. So let's start with the Vagrancy tomorrow.
Yeah, it is, and what Steve is alluding to, of course, is that the normally cross-country pick five is an all-stakes pick five at Belmont, which begins in race three with the Vagrancy. And, you know, I look at Frank Schrockett's PPs, and I think to myself, I don't know if there was a horse that had a more disappointing 2021 than she did, given the way she finished out 2020. And, I mean, for her to have started eight times and gotten a couple of wins, one of which was at Prairie Meadows, both of which were in listed stakes races, that was just not what we expected. The headliner here by far is Bella Sophia, and we're going to see pretty quickly what Bella Sophia comes back with. In all likelihood, horses like this get better as they get a little bit older. She is a prohibitive favorite in here. It's not as if her winning is a fait accompli, because both Miss Brazil and Frank Schrockett on their respective days have run races that are competitive enough. The problem is that Bella Sophia has elevated her game to a point in her best races that's just better than those two. And the expectation, given the way Rudy Rodriguez's barn has gone over the last 5 weeks or so, is that she'll come back very strongly. Looks as if, I haven't seen any workout reports, but it looks as if her morning activity has been very, very strong. So she feels like a horse that you can pretty comfortably single or maybe use as a lone A and a couple of backups. I don't see anybody winning outside of Miss Brazil or Frank Schrockett in terms of any horse not named Bella Sophia, and it's great to have her back.
The Run Happy, and when I saw that this race, which had been the Diablo, had been renamed the Run Happy, it felt like an occasion to sponsor it by Run Happy. So it's the Run Happy, Run Happy.
I was just about to make that joke, Steve. Great minds really do think alike. You know, you and I certainly can be as sarcastic as possible together. It is fun. I have always wanted to meet my match, but yes, it's the Run Happy, Run Happy, sponsored by Run Happy. And it's actually a fun little race. This is the local prep, of course, for the True North. How many of these horses want to end up taking on Jackie's Warrior in a month or so at Belmont will be a different question. The situation is completely different than it was for Drafted last time out in the Carter, when he got no pace set up whatsoever and was running against real grade one horses. This is a grade three race with grade three-ish horses and a pace horse that really just, you can't seem to ever predict when Chateau is going to finally hold on. It seems as if he does it once or twice a year, and generally it's with the aid of a speed bias of some sort. So if it looks through the first few races like the inside is a distinct advantage, then maybe upgrade Chateau. But let's not kid ourselves. Chateau has found a way to lose races when he's had the advantage of the track profile as well. The horse, in many ways, to beat is Chateau. Repo Rocks' last race was outstanding. I'm surprised that he ran as well as he did. That was on opening day of the Belmont spring-summer meet, and he had a really good ride from Andrew Wolfson, stalking the pace on the outside, pulled clear late. This is a horse who's flirted with graded stakes in the past, but obviously served notice last time that he might be a little bit better than he was in those tries. I can't figure out where officiating's Tom Fool came from, and I'd love to see him put it forth again. But, I mean, that was a monumentally disappointing effort in the Tampa race last time. And I don't know what exactly Sappy Joseph Jr. was doing bringing him back that quickly. He didn't get much pace to run at, but he was awful. He never ran a jump at 7-5, and the Tom Fool is now looking like a bit of an aberration. I'm planning on Mr. Phil softening up Chateau enough, or at least maybe staying close, and that setting up Drafted. Drafted has been an incredibly unlucky horse, and I'm glad he finally got a graded stake win in the Toboggan. I mean, this horse has had, if you're a Timeform US user, it is sick how many blue-paced races this horse has been stuck in. And when you're an off-the-pace closer, that's a very hard thing to do. The October 1st race at Belmont last year, he should have won, and he got into all kinds of traffic trouble before he was unleashed late. He was just flying, but ran out of time. So maybe with Jose back on after that big effort in the Toboggan, he can run back to that. I'd like to see it happen.
The sixth and the seventh, go to the eighth, ninth, tenth.
Yeah, eighth is the Man of War. This obviously is now a spring staple at Belmont, and a fun matchup, right, between Ybir and Gufo. And, you know, I think if Ybir was coming in here, I will say the new announcer in Dubai, Alistair Cohen, calls him Ybir. So maybe it is Ybir. If he had come in off of the SEMA Classic, he probably would have been 1-5 because he ran so well in the SEMA Classic. And, you know, we all have sort of fresh in our memories his Jockey Club Derby Invitational effort last year where he just absolutely blitzed the field and won going away. But he came back in that Betfair Exchange Jockey Club and really didn't run that well by Ybir standards. I think, and I really don't want to question what Charlie Appleby does, because I think internationally he might be becoming the best trainer in the world. So I'm wondering if that was just purely a fitness play. And if, because he came out right afterwards and he said, we're still going to the Man of War, you know, there's no change in the plan, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to trust that. I'm going to believe that that's the case. I think this horse will get a decent enough setup. And I think when push comes to shove, he's probably better than Gufo. With that said, Gufo's race last time out in the Pan American was really, really good. It was better. It was more complete than anything he had shown as a three-year-old, as a four-year-old. Even in the Sword Dancer last year, he was kind of wobbly late, and he really didn't seem to want to finish the deal. So I don't know exactly what happened in the other than potential maturation, but he was really good. And that version of Gufo will give Ybir a very, very stout challenge in a race that I think is pretty much between those two. I don't see a Bon coming back from Florida and running as well as he did down there, and I don't think a Bon's best race make him all that competitive. Interestingly, when Ybir, I completely forgot that Ybir was not favored in the Jockey Club Derby Invitational. He was actually the third choice at 5-2 behind Soldier Rising and Bolshoi Ballet. Yeah. Moving on to race number 9, which is the Peter Pan. You mentioned it before. Some of the second tier, quote unquote, 3-year-olds going postward in this spot. And I have to admit, I think we all sort of learned last week that the Arkansas Derby was the weak race that we all sort of anticipated that, expected that it was. But We the People had so much go on that I think he really deserves another shot. Between being completely washed out before the race, being wide into the first turn, really having no opportunity, too close to a hot pace, I think he gets that perfect outside stalking trip at 1 1/8 here and ends up having every opportunity to get the graded stake win with that kind of trip. Electability won a maiden race in game fashion, came back and was close to a pace that I thought was probably hotter than the pace figures showed, but I'm going to believe the pace figures, and so it actually made me kind of downgrade his chances a tad. But if you're a Timeform US user, this horse looks very, very strong. I mean, he's got two Timeform US figures from Aqueduct that really stand out. Of course, Aqueduct is a place that it's very difficult to make figures at based on the you know, the changing weather conditions at times and things like that. But set sail is over for Dick Mandela. He has sent very few horses east over the years, but he's trying this recent maiden winner, who is an L&J Foxwoods homebred. The other horse who was probably worthy of mention is Golden Glider, who now in 3 straight graded stakes has run respectably, but hasn't really been able to break through for any kind of really marquee performance. The final stake race, the last leg of this pick 5, is the Bogey, and it's really heartening to know that Peter Brandt has another female turf horse that he paid seven figures for, and that's Rougier, who I'm very interested to see what their plan is with having all of these horses that run the same distances. But At one point, there might just be a race that has only Peter Brand horses in it, because I'm, of course, referencing Speak of the Devil, who won the Distaff Turf Mile last week in very, very impressive fashion. He, of course, also has Regal Glory, and maybe Regier is the one that's probably going to go more like a mile and a quarter. That sort of was her best game overseas. She won the Prix de l'Opera before finishing a seventh in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. Didn't really have a clean trip that day, and is a horse that you wanted to upgrade coming out of it. She's going to be extremely tough to beat in here. I mean, if she has anything close to what we saw from her regularly last year, she's going to be very, very tough. She has the comfort of her stablemate, Lamista, who, I mean, maybe will force things along a little bit early. I don't know if there'll be some coordination there between the two. It felt like, pace-wise, the only horse that really was going to show a lot of early interest would likely be Stolen Holiday. So either way, Regier will be very, very tough to handle. This feels like a pick five where you're going to want to play like a 1 by 2 by 1 by 3 by 1 and hit it a few times, because it has probably virtually no potential to be a payoff of over $500 for 50 cents. But hey, those kind of tickets can get hit too. Just find your combination and keep pressing.
Well, there were people that went, in fact, I got a wonderful email, and I've got an audio file that we'll have to play next week when I can figure out how to load it and get it to Casey, but a Derby trailer that went 1 by 3 by 20 by 3 by 1 to hit that late pick five. So,
wow, what did that thing pay? That must have paid a mint.
110.
Oh, that's great.
I think it was 110. And we're going to have, maybe not next week, but after Preakness, we're going to have some sort, I've got to figure out a way to have kind of a round table with my new equipment. And I asked Brad Free about this. I'm going to bring it up with Paul Matisse later. Because, in the Derby, I've never hit an all button. So I do want to have that conversation. That late pick five paid $110,000.
I've never hit an all button and gotten 80 to 1, I can tell you that much.
Right? That's the other part of this that, that'll make you crazy.
Well, the other thing in that conversation, what obviously becomes clear is, you know, you play things like that for chaos. Right. And so one of the things that's going to happen is that the next two or three derbies are going to provide such incredible wagering opportunities, because a lot of people are going to do exactly that. And you're going to thin out money in already what is already a very thinned out set of pools. So, you know, you're going to have the reaction. This is how crazy the reaction was to mine that bird. I understand in 2010, favoritism was really up for grabs. Every horse in the race went off between 6-1 and 30-1. In 2010. So that is exactly what's going to happen next year. Unless there is a clear, decisive favorite, and depending on, you know, if Mattress Mack can fill enough furniture to do it himself, but you're going to have a lot of horses at, you're going to have a lot of horses at 40-1 or less, right? Because nobody's going to want to miss out on the long shot, and you're going to have a ton of people doing alls in the Oaks Derby Double and the pick threes and the pick fours. God forbid there's a prohibitive favorite leading into it like Jackie's Warrior. It's just going to ramp up from there.
Well, there was reasonable ways to approach this, and that you did need to be that, you know, that liberal in spreading around or hitting the 20 spot all button. So pretty, it's an interesting discussion, and certainly the people who did it are happy as can be. So Nick Tavarel,
yeah,
I appreciate it.
Anytime, Steve. I look forward to talking to you next week. I'm taking a mini holiday, as the internationals would call it, with the family next week to the beach, but I will be back in time to call the races at Sam Houston on Thursday, which I'm sure everybody's very worried about that. So,
have fun. We'll talk about the Preakness card Friday, and then we're going to look forward. We're seeing you in New York, right? Yes.
Oh, absolutely. One thing, I will not miss a Belmont.
Exactly. So, very good. Nick Tamaro, folks, NTAM1215. And, of course, Nick's New York opinions daily when we're running in New York at In the Money. Let's stay right here. We're 30 minutes in exactly, and we've got Jim Miller to visit with, and then Hammer and Jammer before Paul Matisse brings us. If we have time, I want to get Papo in, too. I just retweeted the form to win snapshots. He put up a few stake ideas for you to look at. And I also put up Dave Grenig on hand for the Chad Brown horses that were working this morning at the Big B at Belmont. And if you didn't see that, early voting's drill. Ryan Martin, too, from NYRA. Ryan from the press office had a little video clip pulling a page from KK. He actually, there was a day where Ryan was in that same exact office for where KK is. Ryan had his early time at the Downs as well. All right, Case. In that case, I'll text Jim. Why don't you let's get hammered? So we'll keep on the beam if we can't get Jim right away. Perfect. And I can tell you, let me, as we just discussed, a couple of things. Thanks for this. Reminder from NYRA that $3 pick three on Sundays. It had its first debut this past Sunday, and it's the last three races on Sunday. And they will provide, you got the Equibase free PPs, but the $3 base, and yeah, that's become the higher, that's one of the things Paul Matisse actually helped author, these higher increment wagers. And, you know, going back to Derby for a second, the $3 pick three that involved the three. And here again, this was, I said this the other day, this was a place where the all button came in handy, because Jack Christopher could easily have been a single for people. Stolen Base was one of the interesting options in the American turf. And then the Derby. So that $3 pick three, which had a pool of $336,000, paid $29,000. So if you went, you know, one by three by 20, that's a $180 ticket. And that's never been my approach. I've always, if I had this discussion, who was I talking to this about? The bet a little to win a lot concept. I just, you know, yesterday with that pick six, the all A ticket was a $24 ticket that brought back over $1,000 with the conso. To me, that, you know, I that's just my preference. Hammer, however, is the right guy to talk to about this, because Rick has recommended the all button on days like Breeders' Cup as a handy tool. Hammer, good morning. Well, Case, is he muted? No?
Okay.
Hammer? There we go. There's Rick.
Contact.
Hammer.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning.
Hey, I was just talking one of your favorite topics, the all button, and it's come up every day trying to figure out, you know, how certain, you know, approaches were going to find Rich Strike in the multis, or in some cases, our man Joe the Dude, Joe wheeled Epicenter with all front and back. He didn't care who was going to be second or potentially beat Epicenter, and he scored out 4,000 that way.
Well, you know, we talked about it for, you know, a lot of times. I think, I mean, I know personally, the only way you're going to hit the big one is figuring out which race is the all button and have it happen. And, you know, that helped me out on Friday using the all button. And we didn't get a chance to talk about that as much on Friday before the Derby. But I think it's a very important handicapping factor is, you know, it's not going to happen every day, but there's those races that, yeah, I look forward to that. You know what? If I have to go more than five deep, that's an all-button race to me. And, you know, that's what the Derby was. And I actually hit the all button on a late one with the Derby, but I didn't catch the 13th race. I missed out on that one, so it threw me off. But I did. It did help me to a couple of nice wins on Friday. So if you're going for a big score on a big day, well, I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, people used to laugh. Oh, you're all button. Yeah, that's not hard. Yeah, it is. It's hard figuring out which race to go on, you know. But anyway, it was a good weekend, I think, for everybody. I think it got people talking more about racing in general. I hear on the streets and people calling and saying, "What about that? What about that?" So I was very, was okay with the result. But we're back home now.
And you tracked quickly. You made a stop at Cadillac Ranch, which you cannot resist. But it seemed like you were very anxious to put an end to the winter.
Well, it was a long meet at Oaklawn. It ended well. And, you know, I got up Sunday. I was thinking, you know, they're opening this new Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa. And I thought it was Monday, and I was going to head up to Tulsa for that, but it ended up being Tuesday, so guess what? I just got in the car, and I left Monday morning and got home Tuesday night, which is a good bonsai. You stopped along the way, of course, at the Cadillac Ranch. I have to stop there, and I stopped at the old Meteor Crater in the Arizona.
I saw that.
But, you know, I called Gene. I go, "Have we ever stopped there?" He goes, "I don't think so." So it's like 5 miles off the road. It's not much, big hole in the ground, but it was a little bit of a diversion. And, you know, wheeled in and, you know, get back home here. And, boy, it took a couple of days for my nose to get used to the different smells here, because I'm an allergy guy. And, boy, I've been sneezing like crazy, but it's nice to be home and, you know, kind of get back to the West Coast and develop. And I forgot we have a 19-year-old cat here, Bella. And guess what? You get up when Bella gets up, and she has a howl that'll go through a bank vault. And I guess like the girls here are not used to getting up early. Me, it's no big deal. So you know, that howl goes off about 5:30, and so it's time to get up. And anyway, it's good to be back home here and getting the sights and sounds of Southern California. And after you know, long time away at Oaklawn, and it was very interesting meet. I got to tell you, Steve, as I mentioned to you, I want to thank all the listeners from the Hot Springs area. Just a ton of people had come up to me or hunted me down and said, "Boy, we listen to the show all the time," and you know, really just really cool, really good people back there. Really made the stay worthwhile, just meeting a lot of people that really weren't shy to just, like I said, come up to you and say, "Hey, we listen to you guys all the time." And so a lot of listeners out there in Hot Springs, Steve, and just wanted to thank them for their support.
Nice. And agreed. I saw the Derby week, saw a lot of people that stopped and said hi. And that's the reason we do it.
That's the reason we do it is right. And you know, a little bit of a, not a little bit, but a part of an Oaklawn tie, especially with the Oak, with Secret Oath. And kind of cool of Wayne, you know, being in the spotlight and, you know, making the right moves. And you know, going back to the Friday morning when he decided not to run at Serial Road in the Derby, which let the winner in, Rich Strike. You know, he just, when he decided not to run and he scratched, and that was great. But, you know, he did it in time to get the other horse in. And it's not, you know, I'm not saying that not everybody would have done it, but I know a few guys that maybe would have said, you know, not really thought about the other guy and said, you know, maybe I'll wait another couple hours or maybe tomorrow. But he got the horse scratched in time to get the phone call to Eric to say, "You're in." And it was a close, I guess it was right on the money. So, you know, if he'd have waited another hour, it wouldn't have happened. So, you know, kudos to Wayne for that. Good karma move. And then what happens? He goes ahead and wins the Oaks that day. So I thought that was good. I know those of us who watched her for, you know, the first 4 months of the year at Oaklawn and hearing the stories. And, you know, I kept hearing when Gary Stevens, who was there as an agent during the year, you know, in one instance compare the way she was looked and the way she ran to winning colors. It just kept clicking in my head, and I kept seeing that 4-1. And I thought it was a great price on her, and she ended up, anchoring a couple of nice horizontal bets for me that day. And so that was pretty cool to see her. And then in pure Wayne fashion, hey, we're going to the Preakness. So that was pretty cool for that. And then for the Derby out there, my little story, I had 9 horses live for the pick 4. And as far as I'm concerned, on Derby day, you know, that's your goal, to be live into the Derby with a good let's go. And, you know, we saw the Will Pays, and they weren't tremendous. And the pick three Will Pays were, I thought, horrible when I saw them. So I remember sending a text to Jimmy before the race saying, you know what, I have got no feel for this race. I have no idea. I had 9 horses live, and I didn't feel comfortable. So it was one of those kind of races. And they had the race out on the big board at Oaklawn. And so I go, I'm going to go watch it out there. I watch it from the winner's circle. And was watching it next to one of the girls, that's a photographer girl. And so the race is going, and you're kind of following as well as you can because you can't hear too well because there's so many people. And coming down the stretch, I knew Epicenter was in front, and I wasn't really sure who was outside of him. And then we spotted this horse together, like, who's that on the fence there? And as they went by the wire, we looked at each other, and she goes, I think that's the 2. I saw 2. And I go, oh, that's Doug O'Neill. Good for him. And then I go, wait a minute, that's not the right colors for Doug O'Neill. And then somebody goes, that was the 21. And I remember immediately going, that's Eric Reed. Oh, my God, that's fantastic. That was just like my first reaction. I thought that was wonderful. I hadn't even looked at the horse, to tell you the truth. I didn't even, think about it. So, and I was rarely not unhappy that I didn't hit because I really didn't think I was going to. But I thought it was like we're walking around going, wow, look at this. And anyway, it was great for, I thought it was a great story, great thing. It was like a perfect finish to this race that really I thought was cloudy going in and didn't really have a handle on it. So that was my Derby experience from the winner's circle at Oaklawn. And I don't know, I think it's just been a good feel and a good talk about ever since.
Yeah. What's your read on them not going to Baltimore?
You know, I kind of had an instance as the next day went by that they were going to do what they thought was right and not necessarily be swayed by the press. Not to say the press, the pressure, the, you know, hey, you won the Derby, you got to move on. It's just automatic. Eric, and I'll talk about my conversation with him in a minute, but I don't know. I just had a feel that they were just going to kind of treat it as we're going to do what we're going to do, like we would do for every day. I mean, here's a guy who's won, 1,500 races throughout the years, and, you know, he kind of got his own way about going things and didn't feel that he got caught up in the swirl of got to run in the Preakness. I think they honestly did think about it. The horse came out of the race well. And in the end of the day, it's just, you know what, I don't think we can win that race, and we're better off going to the Belmont, and that's the way he's been faced the whole way. And let's not change the program. I mean, the program got him to the Derby winner's circle, so I had no problem with it, to tell you the truth.
I don't disagree. I mean, he did, you know, Eric did say going in, he said, you know, he's worked on 5 weeks rest and responds to that, and it's not a big, you know, he's not a, you know, big strapping horse. He's kind of a middle-sized type, and I mean, it certainly looked okay, you know, coming out, obviously. Nicole Russo's been over at Mercury
providing video of the last couple of days of gallops, and there were some a bunch of photographers actually that have gone out and had time with him. But I'm kind of amused in some ways by it that they're trying to plot a course. I mean, yesterday or on Wednesday had Sid, you know, putting a very reasonable valuation on him. They're going to try to maximize, I think at this point, the horse's value, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. I get it.
I think they're going to do it their way, and like you said, they have something here that they never thought they were going to have, and they're not going to. They're going to stick with their plan, and so, you know, I hear you and do great interviews with Eric and Rick Dawson too, by the way, right after to get there, and my Eric Reed story is, I don't think we've ever met face to face, but we spent a lot of time on the phone together over a period of 12 to 15 years for one reason and one reason only. He trained for Jerry Jim Gotti. Okay. So,
who's joining us next?
I was hoping that he would be on first, he was going to tell some stories that I was going to go off on, but because I've talked to him during the week too. But so Jerry, of course, could be a polar person in this game with some of his claiming antics and naming of horses and things like that. So, of course, I was at the beginning of the Jerry show when he made him run a horse in a race that he maybe didn't want to, but that was the deal, and it kind of went on from then. But we've remained friends throughout the years, and kind of we've understood each other, and tried to smooth things over before he would tell me what he was going to do, and we try to get it done without too much turmoil, and which is not easy. So a lot of talks with Eric back and forth over the years of, okay, here's what he's going to do, okay, here's how we'll handle it. He had a habit of putting some horses in races that maybe didn't belong, and he ran some horses in some stakes that at times didn't belong, but at times they did. And then in 2010 at Del Mar, the Clement Hurst during the Zenyatta years, he came in second, got beat a neck in that race. And I just remember thinking, because Del Mar's where it all started. And I just remember thinking, I can still remember that day, like, oh my gosh, this is going to be unbelievable here. And of course, Zenyatta, as she, at some point during every single one of her races, she was never going to win. And then she would always win, of course, until the very end. But anyway, so she wins the race and carry on. But so I called, I always wait a few days to call people on a big event. So I decided to call Eric yesterday. So I called. And he picked up on the second or third ring, and I go, congratulations. He goes, all I could think of when I saw your name was, what has Jammer done now? Because over the years, that's what we talk about, and we laugh about that for a little bit. But he's just sincerely appreciative and humble, and taking it all in. He's just down to salt of the earth type of guy, and so it's pretty cool. And he told me some Jerry stories. Make sure when you talk to Jerry, ask him about the insurance. Write that down. It was good talking to him, I'm looking forward to seeing him run at Belmont, because that's where we'll next reconvene. And the Preakness has taken on, it'll have a life of its own. It will carry on, and we'll be fine. With the filly going in there, I think adds a little bit of the story too, right?
Yeah,
definitely. Heard you say Zandon's going to stop, going to not run, which we kind of figured that. And simplification will be in, and early voting. So it'll be a good race without it. But, we'll survive without the Derby quitter for another 3 weeks and talk about him again at the Belmont.
Exactly. Well, Hammer, with that in mind, let me kind of wrap up and get Jerry in here, because I've got Paul Matisse starting at 11:15, so I've got exactly a 20-minute window for Jammer. a great meet at Oaklawn. Thanks for a terrific winter. I had two stops over there and thoroughly enjoyed the 2 weeks with you, and actually the 4 days that started the meet. I felt it was important to be there for the, you know, for the kickoff. So that was a very fun winter. I appreciate everything.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and we'll crank her up again in a month at beautiful Belmont Park.
Excellent. And Jimmy, because we didn't talk to Jimmy last week, so we'll get we'll get our annual conversation.
He'll be on hand.
Away they go. Thanks, Hammer.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Let's do this. Case, let's take the break, and then we'll come back with Jerry Jamgochian and Paul Mattei for the last hour and 10 on this weekend preview at the races. Stay with us.
As well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Horsemen, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Horsemen, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to hollywoodpnrc.com/racing.
Career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate...